Blog Talk Radio.
Sound Talk Live, where professional stylists, barbers, makeup artists, and nail techs give you the 411 on the good, the bad, and the ugly of everything you want to know about natural hair, hair weaving, makeup, nails, education, products, and more. Real talk. It's what you've been waiting for. Shop Talk Live. Good, bad, the ugly.
Did you know that fungus is not the only thing that causes changes on the toenail? Toenail color and thickness can be changed by smoking, vitamin deficiencies, poor circulation, microtrauma, and many other causes. Let's talk about fungus, ingrown toenails, and neuropathy today with our special guest, podiatrist Dr. Kevin E. Jefferson, also known as the DC Foot Doctor.
Welcome to Shop Talk Live, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Our topic today is on ingrown toenails, fungus, and neuropathy. Good morning, Dr. J. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me and having me on this morning.
It's a pleasure. I'm Debbie J, and my co-host is Susie Sandier. Hey, Sue.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, Dr. J.
How are you?
Hey, Sue, what's happening?
Good.
So can we talk about some ingrown toenails, Dr. J?
Oh, for sure. We can talk at length of that. Anything else you want to talk about? I'm here for you guys. I'm here for the community.
Well, you know, let me tell you how I even got through you. I was scrolling, like, well, I'd be on YouTube, so I was, like, scrolling through my YouTube and stuff, and I saw this picture with this ingrown toenail, right? And that's what really kind of caught my attention. That's how I started following you. You know what I'm saying? So that's how I started following you. So I clicked on your YouTube channel, and you were doing a procedure on an ingrown toenail. And what really got my attention, it was a young girl. I think she was like 15.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know that someone so young can have the ingrown toenails, because I'm just used to, like, older people coming in, or I got ingrown toenails. But so it's not an age barrier when it comes to ingrown toenails?
Oh, not at all. Matter of fact, here in my office here in D.C., most of the procedures I perform ingrown toenails are on teenagers and preteens. And the reason why that is because kids really don't know how to trim their toenails. And probably the number one reason why people get ingrown toenails is improperly trimming the nails when they're doing their nail care at home. So what happens mm-hmm. is that they'll, instead of cutting the nails straight across as they should, and as I know that you do and that you teach, is that they try to follow the natural curvature of the nail under mm-hmm. the skin. But your mm-hmm. typical or your standard toenail clipper that you get from the 7-Eleven or something like that, or from the drugstore, they won't reach mm-hmm. all the way underneath the skin. And people don't pull that nail fold back to really get that that corner out. So they miss that piece.
Right.
And as the weeks go on, the nail continues to grow forward, that piece is jagged. It's like a little point. And that can irritate the skin and even break the skin, allow bacteria to get in. And that's when you have your infected ingrown toenail. One thing that people need to understand is what the real definition is of an ingrown toenail. Just having some discomfort or some pain around the side of the nail doesn't necessarily mean it's ingrown. You can have an incurvated nail, which means the nail has a little bit more of a curvature to it, or maybe there's some thickness on the side of the nail that makes it more uncomfortable when shoes are being worn or when certain activities are taking place, such as running or other type of sporting activities or certain type of shoe, whether it be a very dressy type of shoe that's going to put more pressure on the toes or what have you. And people think because they have discomfort there that the nail is ingrown, and it may not be. So, you know, it's always better to get it checked out by the professional, podiatrist, medical, nail technician, what have you, to make sure that the person's concerns are really warranted. You know, if it's not an ingrown toenail, then an ingrown toenail procedure is not necessary. And we don't want people doing things at home or going places where people aren't really properly trained to get something done that doesn't need to be done, and that creates a whole new set of problems in and of itself.
Okay, because like with the ingrown toenails, when do you know that it needs to be, you know, like we talked earlier today and I was telling you how they just want you to clip because they just want some relief. When is it when they actually need to get it cut? And I mean surgery.
Okay.
I mean, how bad should it, you know?
What I look for when we determine if a procedure needs to be done, let's say there's no break of the skin, there's no redness, there's no swelling, there's no pus or anything, drainage, there's no granuloma, and I'll get into the description of granuloma in a few, is if it's a chronic problem, the person's always getting this incurvated nail, they've never really had any other physical issues with it, and every time they go to get it trimmed or to get it do it themselves or they file it and it remains a problem, then we could do the procedure and do a secondary procedure to prevent the nail from growing back in the corner. That secondary procedure is called a matrixectomy. What the matrix is what we also call the nail root. That's that tissue that grows the nail underneath the skin. And what we do is we either remove the nail root in that corner or we use a chemical called phenol. Some people use other type of acids and what have you to prevent that nail root from growing any new nail in that corner. Those are the permanent procedures. We'll do it for that. But most of the time when we do ingrown toenail procedures, it's because the nail is actually medically ingrown, which means there's been a break of the skin. Because of that spike in the nail plate, there's been bacterial infection of the nail fold. You'll see swelling, you'll see redness, you'll see drainage, and you might see a little bleeding. Now, another thing that we see often when these cases get real chronic is the formation of a granuloma. And our grandparents used to call that proud flesh, if you remember that term, right? So
okay.
What a granuloma is what a granuloma is actually an overgrowth of particularly capillaries, blood vessels, in that area due to the chronic inflammation. And anybody, you've seen granulomas, and they're very sensitive to touch, and they bleed very easily. And as you know, anything that bleeds can get infected, right?
Of course,
so
yes.
When we see that, we have to do one, two, or three things. One, we have to remove that offending portion of nail on the side. And two, we do the procedure to prevent the nail from coming back, the matrixectomy. And we also have to remove the granuloma. The granuloma comes from the skin, so that requires, you know, a surgical removal of the granuloma to keep the granuloma from coming back. Because if you just deal with the nail and you don't deal with the granuloma is not going to go away on its own. It may get smaller.
So that's why when they come back, every time they come back, they want it cut because it grows back.
Exactly. And
every month they come. Yes.
Those are recurring situations where we'll do the permanent procedure to prevent the nail from going back and starting that whole vicious cycle over again.
Exactly. What about preventing it? We've been told, like, okay, as far as clipping the nails, is there a certain way you should clip it, like clip the corners off or, you know, keep clip it straight just to prevent? How do you prevent ingrown toenails?
Mm-hmm. Well, I always
how can
teach patients, especially, I always teach my patients when they come in for that problem, or say they just come in for other nail-related problems, and for those who can do their own nails, at home, is to be sure that you cut the nails straight across. It's natural to want to follow the curvature of the end of the toe, but that's mm-hmm. not how nails grow. If you've seen people whose nails get long, often they're mm-hmm. not the same shape as the end of the toe. All right, so people will naturally want to follow that curve, but as I mentioned earlier, when they do so, they don't get to the point or that nail that's underneath that skin fold. There's a fold of skin on either side of the nail that goes over the side of the nail. You can't see it. So people don't even realize how wide the nail actually is. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, out of sight, out of mind, right? So if you don't mm-hmm. see that portion of nail, you're not going to trim that portion of nail. So when you're chasing that nail around that curve, around that corner into that blind spot, and you mm-hmm. miss that little piece, and you go on about your business like everything's hunky-dory, 2, 3, 4 weeks later, now you got an ingrown toenail.
Everything's hunky-dory. Oh, that's so true.
So cutting the net, it may seem counterintuitive. It may not go with mm-hmm. the actual shape of the end of the toe, but nail should be cut straight across. And the common offenders are preteens and teenagers who start to take care of their own hygiene and learning how to do things. They want to be independent. And so they yeah. try to do these things, and they're cutting their nails incorrectly. And that's why I get, you know, most of my patients who need these procedures are middle schoolers and high schoolers.
Okay. And anybody out there?
I'm sorry.
If anybody, go ahead. You've been had.
I'm sorry. Okay. So I've even had parents who trim the nails of their infants and their toddlers incorrectly. I mean, I've had kids less than a year old come in with ingrown toenails because their parents have cut their nails incorrectly.
Hmm. Okay. Well, is there any?
Yeah.
If there's
it's
anybody
kind of scary
out there,
too.
Yeah, it is scary. If anybody out there wants to call in and ask Dr. J a question, you can call 319-527-6302 and press 1 on your phone. And right now we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
What are you drinking? Introducing a choice that's just as unique as you are. Still and sparkling water by Royal Peace Spring Water. In a world of choices, some things remain refreshingly simple. At Royal Peace Spring Water, every drop is a reminder that you deserve the best. So, what are you drinking? Order yours today at www.royaltyspringwater.com.
Are you looking for a women's empowerment conference near you? The 2023 annual Hershey Women's Empowerment Conference, founded by Tanja Nunnally, will be taking place on October 21st, 2023 from 2 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. at the Stadium Hotel in Miami Gardens. Our powerful guest speakers include life coach Ebony McNichols, mental health counselor Jennifer Palmer, and activist Christina Neptune. For more information, please call 954-549-5822. Again, that's 954-549-5822. See you there.
Real time is what you've been waiting for. Shop Talk Live. Good, bad, the ugly.
Okay, we're back to Shop Talk Live. Hey, Sue, you have any questions for Dr. J?
Yes, I do. First of all, like people that has, I know people that have, they're diabetic, and with their toenails, it grows funny, it gets dark.
and the heel, it has all these calluses on them. And I know somebody in particular, and they picked them. How do you handle that?
Well, first, to handle any type of situation medically, particularly with diabetic patients, is that patient education is the key. They need to understand what the problem is or what the problems are and what they should do at home to encounter it. Now, with our diabetic patients, because of neuropathy, poor circulation, and blood sugar issues, they tend to have these problems at a higher rate than the general population. All right. And so I always caution my diabetic patients about doing things at home, doing what we call bathroom or kitchen surgery, you know, to try to take care of issues. It may
kitchen
be seen,
tech.
It may, yeah, exactly, you know what I'm talking about. So they may see something on their foot that's relatively minor in their eyes.
Yeah.
So they see a piece of skin that's come loose because they have chronic dry skin. And then they'll begin to pull at it. But what they don't realize, especially if they also have neuropathy, which we're going to talk about later, which can lead to sensory loss, they may pull that loose piece of skin, or what people call dead skin, and as they're pulling it, it gets into the normal healthy skin and causes what we call a skin tear. So that becomes a wound, and any wound is subject to infection. And getting an infection starts that whole cascade of having an infection, affecting the surrounding tissues, having loss of the local circulation around the wound, around the infection, getting gangrene in that area, and the whole downhill cascade of losing a toe or losing part of the foot, even losing the leg. So a lot of these issues that we see with our diabetic patients often start as seemingly minor problems. Another thing about neuropathy, it causes chronic dry skin of the lower extremity, because the nerves don't work as they should, and so the sweat glands, which are controlled by the nervous system, don't function as well as they should. So you don't get the normal moisture balance in the feet. So you end up with chronic dry skin, and chronic dry skin is more subject to pressure and friction. So you get more calluses, you get more cracked heels, and everything that goes along with that. And as the heels get cracked and the calluses get thicker, it can get deep enough into the normal skin and cause what we call a fissure, which is a wound, because it breaks through the full thickness of the skin. And again, a fissure can lead to the same type of issues that we see with diabetic ulcers. I've seen it far too often. And again, when folks wait too long or they try to do things on their own, that's when they get themselves into trouble.
So with that being said, of a client like that has those issues, going to a nail tech, you go to a nail, try to keep them up every 2 weeks, but if the technician is not familiar with these things and doing certain things, digging in the nail, not doing it properly, could cause more of a problem as well. Going to a podiatrist, do you think it's best that he goes to a podiatrist that does that kind of service as well?
Exactly. I always caution diabetic folks, whether they think they're well controlled, whether they think they have no issues, or to those whose feet look like a complete disaster area, that they should see a podiatrist on a regular basis to monitor these issues. If there's things that need to be taken care of with the nails, be it fungal nails or thicker nails, or ingrown nails or what have you, a podiatrist should lead the way in all that foot care. Now, if there's things that the podiatrist doesn't think require medical attention all the time, that's when I will recommend folks to medical nail technicians or master pedicurists who are well-trained and well-versed on how to recognize certain situations and when to take action and when not to take action and when to refer their clients to a podiatrist or other medical professionals. So I would tell folks, you know, go pro first. Don't try to do things on your own and then try to fix it on the back end. If you're not a mechanic, don't try to change your own, don't try to change your own brakes on your car just because there's a YouTube video showing you how to change your brakes. Right?
Yes.
I mean, go to people who do these things.
Okay.
Exactly.
Susie and I was talking about. Yeah, Susie, did you tell him about the what is it, the Vicks with your client?
Exactly. Yeah. This week, a client was just talking about foot or whatever, and I was like, oh yeah, they always tell you put Vaseline. You go to technicians, Vaseline, put socks on or whatever. And she said her doctor told her to put Vicks on her foot and put, fluffy socks on and go to at the nighttime.
Okay.
What's the remedy
here's the whole background on Vicks VapoRub. All right. So as we know, Vicks VapoRub has been around for decades, and its original use is to help with decongestion when you have a cold or the flu, something like that. You rub it on your chest or in your upper neck, and the vapors. Which is why the name from the menthol. Now, the active ingredient in Vicks is a menthol, right? So it enters the nasal cavity, helps with the inflammation that's going on in the sinuses to decrease the swelling of the sinuses to help you breathe better and help with the cough and all the other kind of good stuff. Now, because of the vehicle that Vicks is in, right? It's in a petroleum jelly type of vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Vicks is not a cream. And why is Vicks not a cream? Because it will evaporate or get absorbed into the skin and be gone within half an hour. All right, so that's why the Vicks vehicle is a petroleum jelly or an oil-based type of thing, because it'll sit there for a long time. I remember when I was little, my mother would literally put it in my nose when I got sick.
Oh,
and
yes. Yes. I do that too.
Right.
Even my mom to this day, she walks around and smells it. I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Now here's my theory. There's really no history in how Vicks got to become this cure all for foot problems, which is, in my opinion, it is not. From the scientific side, there's never been any studies that show that Vicks VapoRub cures issues such as fungal toenails, such as ingrown toenails, such as dry skin issues. It's never been studied in that way. The manufacturer of Vicks VapoRub makes no such claims. All right, but people do and say what they're going to say based on their own experiences, right? So my theory on why Vicks would work for skin is that, again, it's the vehicle itself, okay, being that it's more a petroleum jelly, it's an oil base, just like Vaseline, just like vitamin A and D ointment, which I use a lot here in my office. It's not a moisturizer per se. It's a skin protectant. When we were small, what do we use Vaseline for in the wintertime? We put it on our lips. Our parents used to drown our faces in it before we went outside to play, before we headed off to school, to keep the cold and the wind from our faces and making our faces dry and preventing our lips from being cracked and so forth and so on. Chapstick and other things like that we use for lips, they're oil-based. They're not creams because they need to stay there as a protectant for the lips. In the same way, If you're putting something that's petroleum based on the skin of your feet, it's going to stay there for pretty much most of the day, and that helps maintain the skin in its present state. Now, anything that's oil based, anything that's petroleum jelly, Vaseline, and all those other things, baby oil, even, they're not moisturizers. They're protectants. They're barriers from the environment. So they're just going to maintain whatever level of moisture that's already existing before it's applied to the foot and the leg. So I'll have a lot of people come to the office with dry skin conditions, and they've used a bunch of different things, and they say, I even put Vaseline or Vicks or things like that on my legs and feet, and the dry skin still won't go away. That's because Vicks, Vaseline, those things, they don't bring water to the skin. They don't bring any water to the game. They're not moisturizers. All they're doing is maintaining whatever level of moisture balance that already existed. So I tell people when they want to use a Vicks or a Vaseline or vitamin A and D ointment or anything else like that, to apply something that's water-based first. And your water-based products are going to be either creams or lotions. That's because their main ingredient, or one of the main ingredients, is water. So maintaining a good moisture balance in the skin can be tricky. So I tell them to apply the cream or the lotion of their choice first, and then to apply a thin layer of the Vaseline or the A&D ointment. If they want to walk around smelling like a hospital, they can use Vicks. But what the Vaseline on the outside is going to do is help lock in, if you will, the cream or the lotion into the skin, prevent it from being evaporated, prevent it from being absorbed into your socks and shoes, and help the cream or the lotion work longer throughout the day. But those things just by themselves really aren't doing the trick. It makes it look better. It makes it look shiny and pretty, but it's not really helping. Now, Vicks, when it comes to toenail fungal infections, I still don't know why some doctors recommend that. I've had other patients come to me and said that the previous doctors or the previous podiatrists recommended that they do that. I don't do that because Vicks is not antifungal. It does not kill fungal
organisms. What about the vinegar? A lot of people come and they go on YouTube. Oh, they say put my foot in some vinegar.
Vinegar or apple cider vinegar and all these derivatives.
Yeah.
Remember, vinegar is acetic acid.
Yeah.
Right? That's the main ingredient of vinegar. Now, depending how often somebody's applying it and how extensive the fungal problem is, it may have some benefits as far as killing organisms. But the reason I don't like using vinegar as a primary antifungal to deal with, say, athlete's foot or fungal toenails is because it is a drying agent, just like Epsom salt. Epsom salt is a drying agent. Okay? So when you're using these things on a regular basis, you actually end up drying your skin out. So that's why I refrain from telling people or recommending that they soak their feet in vinegar or Epsom salt or apple cider vinegar for an extended period of time for these
and
issues
that's,
because
and that's
of that
a, yeah. Well, yeah, that should remove.
Right?
Yeah, cause dryness.
Yeah,
all right. So, now they do have their place. We still give instructions for people to do Epsom salt soaks or vinegar soaks, like after a ingrown toenail procedure, or for folks who have that real bad, wet, smelly athlete's foot between the toes.
Yeah.
Do those types
dried
of soaks.
Dried it out.
Precisely because they're drying agents. But you know, once the situation has been resolved, they stop doing that, because again, maintaining a proper natural moisture balance of the skin is extremely difficult. Just in the face, right? You guys are cosmetologists, so you know how difficult moisture balance is, especially for the face, because it's exposed to the elements all day long, the sun and what have you. So that is always a tricky situation. So imagine dealing with the same thing in the feet. People wearing socks, they're wearing shoes, they're walking around, you know, taking hundreds and thousands of steps a day. And that also has effects on the skin and moisture balance of the skin, not to mention any other pre-existing medical condition. So it's very important that we educate our patients and educate our clients on what to use, when to use it, how long to use it, or when not to use these things, so people can have more successful outcomes.
Okay.
Thank you for that. Thank you for answering that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're going to take a break? Right,
that was
now?
A guy.
Right back.
Okay.
Okay.
It's your time to shine once again. The highly anticipated competition hosted by Beauty Elements is back. People's Choice 2023 Fall Edition. Submit your photo and video to participate. Four different categories. Fantasy. Destiny Wig. Weave. $3,000 in prizes. Submit now for your chance to win.
Are you looking for a women's empowerment conference near you? The 2023 annual Hershey Women's Empowerment Conference, founded by Tanja Nunnally, will be taking place on October 21st, 2023, from 2 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. at the Stadium Hotel in Miami Gardens. Our powerful guest speakers include life coach Ebony McNichols, mental health counselor Jennifer Palmer, and activist Christina Neptune. For more information, please call 954-549-5822. Again, that's 954-549-5822. See you there.
What are you drinking? Introducing a choice that's just as unique as you are. Still and sparkling water by Royal Peace Spring Water. In a world of choices, some things remain refreshingly simple. At Royalty Springwater, every drop is a reminder that you deserve the best. So, what are you drinking? Order yours today at www.royaltyspringwater.com.
Real talk is what you've been waiting for. Shop Talk Live. Good, bad, the ugly.
Welcome back to Shop Talk Live. If you have a question for Dr. J, call into 319-527-6302, 319-527-6302, and raise your hand. Press 1 on your phone, and we'll click you on in with us. So, Dr. J, let's talk about neuropathy.
Okay.
I'm interested in that because I've been seeing a lot of that, even on like on TV and stuff like that. And what are the symptoms?
First, what people need to understand is the definition of neuropathy. Now, the
okay.
word neuropathy is like saying the word mathematics. There's a whole lot of different types of mathematics or branches of mathematics. Mathematics has geometry, trigonometry, calculus two, differential equations, so forth and so on. And it goes up as far as difficulty to understand. Neuropathy is the same way. Neuropathy is a general term for any nerve disease or nerve condition. All right. So when you're sitting in a same position for a long period of time, and your toes begin to go to sleep because you've been sitting
okay.
in that one position for an hour or two or what have you, and you've been putting pressure on the nerves in your legs, and you're just getting some tingling in your toes, that is a neuropathy. It may not be a chronic disease condition, but it's still a neuropathy. Now, most of the time now when folks understand the word neuropathy, it's associated with a chronic condition, right? Sciatica. That people get
okay.
In the leg, which is probably one of the most common types of neuropathy, is a neuropathy. So it's the sciatic nerve is the largest nerve in the body outside of the spinal cord. And so as a result, it's subject to a lot of stress. And it can give those symptoms that people complain about in the back of the thigh going down the leg, burning, numbness, weakness of the leg muscles, tingling issues and things like that. You hear about restless leg syndrome, That's a neuropathy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in podiatry, most of the time when we're dealing with neuropathy, often it's associated with diabetes. And the reason why that is, we have to remember that diabetes is a body-wide condition, head to toe, skin to bone. It affects every system and every tissue. That includes the nervous system. So in the lower extremity, where often neuropathy takes place associated with diabetes, you get these symptoms of numbness, tingling, burning pain, itching. Some people will complain that they feel like there's a knot in their foot or something's inside their foot unnaturally when there's nothing there. What we also see with neuropathy, an advanced neuropathy, is the formation of foot deformities, but particularly hammer toes, because as the neuropathy becomes more chronic and becomes more severe, it weakens the muscles inside the foot and the toes, and you can get these deformities. When we were talking about skin care earlier, one of the earliest things that we see when it comes to neuropathy of the feet, and neuropathy of the feet, neuropathy of the hands, it's called peripheral neuropathy. That's because it's away from the center of the body. Now, we see this early on in diabetic neuropathy because, as I mentioned before, that sweating is controlled by the nervous system, and it's controlled by the autonomic nervous system. It's the part of the nervous system we don't control. When it's hot outside or we're in the gym working out, we don't decide on our own that we're going to start to sweat. All right.
Mm-hmm.
You go outside and it's hot, you just start sweating. You run on the treadmill, you just start sweating. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to activate it. The body already deals with that for us, thankfully. I mean, can you imagine if we were to go outside and you're in Miami, I don't have to tell you about heat. All right.
So there you go.
When it's 95 degrees outside and you're walking across South Beach or wherever you are, imagine if you forgot to sweat. All right.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. the maker made it so that we wouldn't have to think about those things. Okay.
Okay.
So I'm sorry. Go ahead. You have a question?
No, go ahead. No, that was something else. Go ahead.
So with neuropathy, the autonomic system often is affected so that it's not working properly. And when the autonomic system is not working properly, those sweat glands in the feet are not activated. So when those sweat glands are not activated, we're always sweating. Even when we're not running around or even when we're not outside in 95-degree Miami heat. Right, we're always having moisture put into our skin, again, to maintain that natural moisture balance in the skin that we all need. Okay? If you sweat too much, what happens? Your skin gets clammy and wrinkled and macerated.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't sweat enough, it's when you get the dryness, the cracks, and the fissures, and so forth and so on. The balance is the key. Now, with autonomic neuropathy and the sweat glands not producing the normal amount of moisture, let's not even call it sweat, let's call it moisture, and not producing the normal amount of moisture is when you get that chronic dry skin, which is often a sign of neuropathy before even the other symptoms of the numbness, the tingling, the burning, all that kind of stuff begins to take place. So when I see chronic dry skin in a diabetic patient, always caution them that because of this issue, to be on the lookout for these other type of symptoms. All right, so these are the things with neuropathy associated with diabetes that we see. We also see neuropathy in the feet associated with lumbar spine issues, those lower back problems, whether it be issues with disc issues of the lower back, whether it be loss of the disc or the cartilage between the vertebrae, or spinal stenosis, or arthritis of the lower back that puts pressure on the nerves that come out of the lower back. The nerves that end up in the tips of the toes, they all start in the lower back, the lumbar spine. And as the nerves course down the legs and toward the end of our toes, they get smaller like the branches of a tree. So if there's any issue anywhere along that chain, you can get symptoms. So if somebody has, let's say, an L4, L5 disc issue, either a bulging disc or desiccated disc, all these things that people have with disc issues of the back, they can have symptoms, say, along the side of the foot. The little toe is always numb. And
yeah.
Often when folks come to me complaining of nerve type of issues with their feet, if they don't have diabetes or some other systemic issues, neuropathy is also seen in alcoholics. Mm-hmm. Neuropathy is also seen in people that have been on chemotherapy.
Okay. So if somebody's not on any of that, how do you check for that? Like, you know, how do you diagnose
There are some simple things that we can do in the office, and simple tests that particularly we do on our diabetics on their first visit and at least annually, and testing the nervous system of the foot. We do light touch. We do like using a cotton ball or something light with the eyes closed, and we test the toes and various areas of the foot to see if they can feel it. Another one is we use a tuning fork to make sure the patient can feel vibratory sense to be able to feel very light vibrations is another area in diabetes where any signs of neuropathy first show up. Sharp and dull. Can you tell the difference if something is slightly sharp or if something is dull?
And
one of the most important things that we use is called a microfilament, where we're testing for what's called loss of protective sensation. Now, with any of these issues, if a patient is showing signs of this or they're having numbness of the feet, the problem that creates is that the patient doesn't know or often misses when there's an injury of the foot. I've had patients come to my office who had shards of glass, not just a little sliver, but a shard of glass in their foot and didn't know it because their neuropathy was so terrible that they couldn't feel glass in their foot. Now, we've all stepped on something sharp, whether it be a Lego or a piece of glass that we missed when we swept up that glass we broke in the kitchen. Now, imagine not being able to feel that, right? And having a half inch piece of glass in your foot, and suddenly the person's having some swelling, having some redness, having some drainage, and a little cut in their foot, and have no idea. And then they come to the office, and I reach in, I pull out this piece of glass, and I ask them if they knew that was there, and they say no, but they do remember dropping the glass in the kitchen 2 weeks ago.
Right.
You know, so those are the things that. Those are the problems that neuropathy, especially associated with diabetes, present to folks who have that condition, and the challenges we face as podiatrists and foot specialists when folks come to us with those issues.
Wow. That's a lot. We talked about a few things today, Dr. J, but I love talking about feet, and I love knowing all the different diseases of the feet and everything. I would prefer to have been a podiatrist and a nail specialist, but really, because I tell the girls all the time, I like digging in toe jam and I like all that kind of stuff. I just like it. It's like people are like, oh, you like the feet? I'm like, yeah, give me some toe jam. Give me some bad feet. Like that. I don't want these pretty feet. You know, give me some bad feet that I can work on and I can see the difference after you do it. You know, it's like how can I say it? When you do somebody's feet, like I'll see you on your channel, you do someone right after you're done, it's like day and night. It's like, wow. You know, he went from that to this.
That's one of the blessings of the profession of podiatry is that most folks can come in with a problem, whether it be a issue with the nails or the skin or something like that or some painful condition. They can come in with a problem and leave with the problem either completely eradicated or looking much better and patient feeling much better, often in one visit. It's the same thing with what you're doing. A few months ago, I did a podcast with a master pedicurist here in D.C. Her name is Angela Wigglesworth. I'm going to send you the link for that, so be sure you check out that podcast. And we actually did it in studio, so we were both sitting side by side talking about these issues, talk about the relationship and how podiatrists and nail technicians can work together, be in sync to deal with all these issues that are out there. You know, a lot of people in the community have no idea what podiatrists do. They may think it's just nails, or they may think it's just plantar fasciitis or whatever. You know, I can go through a number of things, but don't realize when to see a podiatrist, how often they should see a podiatrist, or should they go to a nail technician, or should they just go to a nail shop they saw in the mall, and things like that. You know, you know, if you have knee pain, you wouldn't go to a mall massage therapist because your knee is killing you. You know, you go to an orthopedist. Same thing with podiatry. If you're having significant foot issues, see a podiatrist. And then, you know, if there's others that need to be involved, that can take place as well.
That's good. Before we leave, because we, you know, we're up on time, but before we leave, can we just talk about the MNT for my nail techs that's listening? Because they like to know more about becoming a medical nail technician and how to become. I mean, I tell them how to become a medical technician, but are you associated with anything with the organization, you know, the company, the medical nail technicians?
I'm not associated at this moment.
I refer,
but you know, we have. I have been approached by some schools to give lectures and what have you. And when time is permitting for me to do that, I will definitely look into pursuing that. I do have, and I have had medical assistant students come through my office to train because they need a certain number of hours of clinical training as well. It's not all just books and sitting in lectures. They have to get out.
Yeah,
the
they need 40 hours.
Do
yes.
work. Doctors also. Yep, they need 40 hours. So we do work with schools for that training. So I have had students of, you know, different types of schools and levels come in through my office. I've had podiatry students come and shadow me here in the office, and you know, so that's a lot of fun for me. That's a blessing for me to see people who are coming up. Coming up the ranks and want to get out here and do this type of work. You know, again,
so if I had a
some
student,
people think
so,
it's, uh-huh.
If I had a student that that did the modules or whatever, the tests and everything online, like they're supposed to, they have to do that first. They have to take the ANT class, and then they have to take the, which is the advanced nail technician course, and then they have to take the medical nail technician course. And then they go and do the 40-hour internship with the podiatrist. So if they came to do that with you, because the podiatrist is the one that gives them the certificate saying that you are, you know, besides the test and everything, they take the test, but you give them, you can give them a certificate. Do you give them a certificate?
Well, if
they,
that's what the school
they
requires.
Completed that 40 course.
If that's what the school.
Okay.
Usually, what it is. Usually, what I've done here is that there's a log that needs to be kept. You know, a daily log of what of the patient. I mean, of the student actually being here in the office, and then a checkoff list of what the student has learned. You know, did they learn sterile technique? Did they learn how to put on a dressing? Did they learn how to assist in procedures? Do they learn how to put on sterile gloves, so forth and so on? All those things that they learned in the class, and now they have to apply in the field. Did they actually learn those things in my office? So I do that part, and then the school does the certificate.
Okay, because that's all it is. It's a certificate. They already have a license as a nail tech or a full specialist. They just need to go to a podiatrist. And you signed off that you did give them 40 hours of training, and that's it.
Right.
Now you're an MNT. So now they can, you know, go in the salon and not do surgery on the ingrown toenail, but they can cut it. to give them some relief.
Exactly. Okay. But not just that, but to learn how to identify other problem areas where they can say that person needs to go see a doctor for this issue.
Exactly. So also, I know you have, I believe you have products on Amazon.
I have an Amazon storefront. I don't have products of my own, but I do have a storefront of products that I recommend. So all my social media and everything is at DC Foot Doctor. So my the Amazon store is amazon.com/shop/DC Foot Doctor.
Give them all your social media handles. Give the listeners all your social media handles.
All my handles are the same. DC Foot Doctor for YouTube, for Facebook, for Instagram, for TikTok, for X, formerly Twitter, for Threads.
Mm-hmm.
And of course the Amazon storefront. Everything is DC Foot Doctor. So that's where you can find me. My information as far as needing to contact me for potential students or somebody needs to be seen in the office or what have you, all that information is in all those profiles. So I'm easy to find. I like talking to people about the issues and what I can do to help. If somebody's far away and they can't get here to DC, I know people from around the country, and often I know people in the town where you are, I can refer you to.
Okay. Perfect. That's perfect. Mm-hmm. But so I want to thank you so much. Oh, my God, you don't even know how much this means to me to talk to you about
that.
And I'm happy to see what you've been talking about then. Forever.
Cool. Hey,
I'm always telling Sue, go on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Go to DC.
Yeah.
You know, go to DC Foot Doctor. Go watch it. I tell my students, too. I'm even going to bring the TV to my class so they can watch it.
All right.
You know, I said.
All right, excellent. Just,
you know.
Hey, no problem. So, you know, when I'm available. So if you ever want to talk about something more specific, we can do that. All right. So
There's a lot of things I want to talk about. I definitely will.
All right.
So again, thank you very, 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 very much for
coming
on the show. Okay.
Yes,
all right.
Ma'am.
Okay.
All right. You too. Talk to y'all later.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye now.
Bye.
All right, thank you all again.